Welcome to the Good Dog Pod. Join us every other Wednesday when we discuss all things dogs, from health and veterinary care to training and behavior science, as well as the ins and outs of Good Dog and how our platform can help you successfully run your breeding program. Follow us and join Good Dog's mission to build a better world for our dogs and the people who love them. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Good Dog Pod, where we discuss all things related to canine health, research, how Good Dog helps breeders run their breeding programs, and so much more. I'm Nicole, the breeder community lead here at Good Dog, and your host for this week's episode. While we usually cover canine health topics on this podcast, today we're going to be diving into something a little different, and that's business insurance for dog breeders. To help us with that, we brought in an expert for this episode, so I'm really excited to introduce Dennis Stowers, who is a certified insurance counselor at Murrayer Foster, a full-service insurance agency that also offers specialized business insurance for dog breeders at kennelpro.net. We invited Dennis here today to discuss why dog breeders should consider insuring their programs and how business insurance can protect you and your breeding program. At the end of the episode, he'll also be doing a Q&A answering our community's previously submitted questions, so stay tuned for that. As always, this was a topic requested by our community, and we're so excited to present it to you today, and we hope it'll be a helpful resource for you and your breeding programs. As a friendly reminder, this podcast is for general information purposes only, and we cannot speak to or give advice on individual insurance questions, and we recommend working directly with a certified insurance counselor for those. So with that, I will pass things off to Dennis to kick off this episode.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Well, my name is Dennis Stowers. I'm an insurance agent. I've been in insurance business since 1970, and we run this out of an independent insurance agency out of Lansing, Michigan, and getting into the dog business, about 30 years ago, we received a call from a lady, and she was going to do something that was unheard of at the time. She was going to your house to take care of your pets while you were on vacation, so you didn't have to take them to the mean old boarding kennel. And she asked if we could write her insurance, and we found a carrier, the Hartford, to write it. And we wrote her insurance, and 2 minutes later, we got another call from another person, and we wrote her insurance, and the calls just kept coming, coming, and coming. We received a call from the Association of Pet Dog Trainers out of California. They asked us to come to Chicago for their national convention. We went. We had a little booth. It was in between Purina and Iams, and we had an old little piece of cardboard with some dog pictures on it, and we sold insurance. And they would only let these people in for about 2 hours at a time, and when they opened the doors at 10 o'clock, we probably had close to 100 people standing there waiting for us to talk to them. In 2.5 days, we sold over 165 policies to dog trainers. When we got back to the office, the telephones rang 24/7. We had to call Hartford, and Hartford's customer service actually took a lot of our calls. From the pet sitters, the dog trainers, we went on to do doggy daycares, which were a new thing. We do dog clubs. We do therapy dog organizations. We do the sporting dog people, the retrievers, the pointers, the flushing dogs, groomers, board in your home, daycares, breeders, of course. Just about anything related to the dog industry, with the exception of rescue groups, we get involved in. We're probably one of the largest writers of insurance for the dog pet industry in the nation now. So back in the days, commercial insurance, and we'll talk mostly about dog breeders right now. For the most part, the dog breeders that we do are basically home base. They do the breeding at their residence, okay? There's a few of them that are bigger operations that actually have kennel facilities at their house. And the one thing that we always run into is in the smaller breeders, they believe that their homeowner's insurance provides liability insurance for their breeding operation. And if you read a homeowner's policy, which I know everyone does, you'll find two exclusions in it. And one's called business pursuits, and that relates to their liability. Any business liability, whether you're weaving baskets in the garage or breeding dogs or training dogs in the backyard, anything related to a business is going to be excluded under your homeowner's policy. In addition to that, if you take your two-car unattached garage and turn that into a kennel, that building is automatically excluded because there is an exclusion under your homeowner's policy that excludes any business property, and that can be contents or the building itself. So in those cases, then you need to look at going to a commercial insurance policy and getting a comprehensive general liability policy. And if you do have property, most of the time we would write it under a business owner's policy that gives you property liability, et cetera. Different types of breeding programs, they all have about the same exposures, okay? There's a small scale, of course, you know, the in your home type stuff. And that's not a problem. Basically, all you do is you look at a liability because you don't have any property to insure. Most of the time, you have crates or dog pans or stuff, and it's not worth insuring, you know, that small of value. Now, when you change it over to building a building or a kennel in the backyard, that's a different story. Then you need commercial property insurance, you insure your contents, and loss of income. So if you had a fire, lightning, windstorm, hail, and you lost your contents, you lost your business, we reimburse you for your loss of income until you can get back into business. So that's business interruption. So you actually, even if you're a dog breeder, you have the same exposures as a shoe store. And that's the way you actually put that program together. Now, the one thing I will say is don't contact your homeowner's carriers, because this is what we've run into. Homeowners carriers, because they specifically exclude liability, they specifically exclude property. If your kennel burnt down tomorrow, they're not going to pay for it. If somebody comes to your property and gets bit by a dog or hurt or falls down over a hose or slips on wet concrete at the kennel building, they are not going to represent you or pay for it. They exclude it. They don't want anything to do with it because court systems has forced sometimes the homeowner's carrier to at least defend you on those. They may not pay, but they have to defend. So a homeowner's carrier looks at it as like, hey, if we don't write your homeowners, we don't have an exposure. And that's what they do. So if they find out you're running a business at your home, right now there's a good chance that they probably would non-renew you or cancel your policy. We used to be able to do this. We ran into this a lot of times with our sporting dog people. They live on the property, the retrievers, the pointer guys. They live on the same property as their business. And for a while, we were able to write homeowners with Safeco, and they quit. And then we went with Lexington. They quit. And right now, we do not have a market that will write homeowners for people that have businesses on their property. So that's just a FYI. Just take it from me. Homeowners policy will not cover any business exposure. Like I said, if you have a kennel building there, you need to go with commercial property, and the liability is a must either way you go. Oh, here's one thing about it. Liability. Liability is bodily injury and property damage, okay? And that covers you anywhere in the United States, Canada, Puerto Rico, U.S. territories. A general liability policy is a standard. It's the same policy that the plumber has. So you do have that. The one thing under an insurance policy is animals in your care, custody, and control. Now, been a lot. I used to raise English setters a long time ago, and then the ones I picked never turned out. And then they would call me in 6 months, and they'd want to know if I was going to breed again because the ones I sold were better than the ones I kept. So I quit doing that, and I got on the other side of the fence and started buying them from breeders and was more successful that way. So I was not a very good breeder, I guess. Well, I was, but I wasn't. So I wasn't a good choice of dogs. So in a breeding situation, if you bring in outside females into your kennel, you have a care, custody, and control exposure. So if something happens to the dog while it's in your care, custody, and control, whether it dies, gets injured, whatever, is that our policies include what they call care, custody, and control. So for animals in your care, custody, and control, we provide the medical or replacement of the animal. And there's different levels, and you can design your limits and your coverages however it fits your exposure. The one thing about breeding is back when I was a kid, when you had a Bernese mountain dog, and it got hooked up with a poodle. They called them curs, and you couldn't get rid of them. Now they call them Bernedoodles, and you can't afford them anymore. So the one thing is, most of the time in the breeders that we do, those litters are pretty much sold before they're even whelped. So those dogs that are in your kennel are considered animals in your care, custody, and control, non-owned dogs, and we can cover those puppies. Now, if they get parvo, kennel cough, whatever, there's nobody out there that does sickness with the exception of the Hartford, and Hartford is very limited on what they'll do, if not necessarily a breeding operation. They'll do doggy daycares and boarding kennels. They do have coverage for it. It's a little expensive, but it is available. Most of the other carriers don't provide that. So theft, attack by another dog, that type of stuff, fire, lightning, wind, storm, and hail to those puppies. If they're owned by somebody else, you can cover them under your animal bailee coverage. It also applies to show dog people. I mean, if you're a dog trainer, show dog person, you travel with dogs while they're in transit, while they're at the dog show, while they're in your possession without the owner present, that's animal bailee coverage, and that's available. And that can be written up to $2 million, anywhere from $10,000 to $2 million, depending on the exposure that you have, what kind of dogs you're transporting, et cetera, et cetera. The most expensive dog that we insure right now is a $200,000 stock dog. That was the most expensive one we've ever insured. We've insured dogs for $100,000. We've insured dogs that Purina had, and they shipped to South America for the Purina days down there. And we insured all their dogs while they were in transit and while we're in South America. So there is coverage available for that. Coverage goes into effect. Basically, you know, we like to talk to people over the phone. There's a way that you can actually apply online. Applying online is not the best way to do it, because there are a few things that people don't understand about insurance, and it's a good idea to talk to somebody on the phone, because we're going to ask you some questions that you basically don't think about. One of the most important one is that when you set up a company, usually these people are setting them up as limited liability corporations. Not a problem. You write an insurance policy for a limited liability corporation, you got your $1 million, $2 million, whatever limits that you buy, which is fine. But you're operating it on a piece of property that's owned by you, you and your husband, et cetera, your home. The thing is that if somebody got hurt on that property and they decide to sue, and they sue everybody and their brother, because attorneys, like, the more arrows they shoot, the better chances of hitting a bullseye. They're not only going to sue the LLC, but they're going to insure the property owners. You become like a landlord to the LLC. When we get into those situations, we get a lot of dog trainers, per se, most of the time. And, you know, Sally's dog training, and she's the sole proprietor, and she calls us up and says, "Hey, I'm so excited. I'm an LLC now." And I go, "Real great. Where do you train your dogs?" And she goes, "In my backyard." I'm going, "Ruh-roh, you just cost yourself a little bit of liability insurance." So when you do that LLC, you always want to make sure that you add you and your husband on there as an additional named insured under that insurance policy. That way, if they sue the LLC and they also sue the property owner, then that LLC policy is not only going to protect the LLC, but it'll protect you as a property owner as it relates to a business liability. If the neighbor lady comes over to borrow a cup of sugar and falls down the front steps, that's where your homeowner's policy is going to cover that. So you have to kind of separate the commercial to the business. So that's one thing that people fail to answer when they do it online. And we have a place online you can do this stuff. But like I said, it's always best to talk to somebody and let them answer some questions, because that's how we find out what's going on, you know. Because another example of this is, we talked to a show dog person, and this guy said, I asked him about his kennel, and he said he had a $250,000 kennel behind his house. I asked him how he insured it. He said it was under his homeowner's. I said, "No, it's not." He said, "Yes, it is." I said, "No, it's not. Yes, it is." And I hated to tell him to do this, but I said, "Call your homeowners and ask them, because you got an exposure there." It wasn't about 5 minutes later, the phone rang and the bells were ringing and the PA system was call on line three, and it was him and going, yeah, I need to insure my building because it's not covered under my homeowners. And, you know, I got to say, I told you so. Property goes into effect. You know, basically what we do is, you know, if there's just general liability, we normally can quote that right over the phone and send you the forms and the application to fill out, which takes 2 minutes. And you just put on there whatever day you want it to go into effect, today, tomorrow, whatever. And if everything's on that app, once we get it back, we'll send you confirmation that the coverage is in force. Then it usually takes about a week or so before they actually get a policy number and put it all together. And we'll send you the policy with formal confirmation of the policy. Show dog people, they usually travel with dog crates that are worth $7,000 to $1,000 a piece. They have grooming equipment. They have a little bag of trimmers and scissors. And some of those scissors are $500 a piece. And they take them to the dog show. They have them in a bag. Somebody walks by, picks the bag up, and they lose a couple $1,000s of scissors or whatever. That all can be insured under a business owner's policy. We insure the contents, and it's anywhere in the United States while it's in transit, temporarily located elsewhere. There's coverage there. Liability is covered anywhere in the United States, Canada, Puerto Rico. So if you were a dog show person, right, breeders don't usually go off premises. But if you do go off premises where you go show a dog someplace and keep people out of your kennel facility, you have the same liability at that place as you do in your backyard or at your kennel. Same thing with the show dog people when they're at a dog show. If their dog bites somebody at the dog show, they have the same liability there as they have at their home kennel. Same thing with the hunting dog people at the field trials, etc. Mortality. Here's the one thing that's hard. It's not impossible, but when you have a dog kennel, we have policies that cover animals in your care, custody, control. So a boarding kennel, a doggy daycare, a board training operation, Labrador retriever guys that train sporting dogs, appointing dogs, of course, they all have clients' dogs, and we insure those clients' dogs while they're there. The one problem is that in a breeding situation is you've got your stock. Those dogs are not covered as property, not covered under the animal Bayley coverage because they're owned by you. There is a way you can insure them, and you can insure them under contents. The coverages under contents, if you look at a policy, are so limited that most of the time I tell people I'd rather steal your wallet than sell you insurance under a property policy to cover your stock. However, we do have mortality insurance, and mortality insurance is life insurance. And there's two ways that you can write life insurance. There's the limited mortality, which I would call an accidental death policy. It covers animals. It excludes death by sickness, okay? So if a dog was stolen, accidentally attacked by wild animals, get hit by a car in transit, gets involved in a collision. Those are the types of things that that limited mortality policy will cover. Most of the time, we use that for the sporting dog people, the pointers, the retrievers, squirrel dogs, coon dogs, any sporting dog usually go with the limited. The full mortality is a life insurance, just like you and I would buy for ourselves. It covers death by sickness, including all the coverages under the limited. It's a little expensive. It runs about $7 per $100 of value. And if you want whelping included in there, it runs about $9 per $100 of value. We use that program primarily for therapy dogs, the diabetic alert dogs that families buy for their kids, service dogs, working dogs, the bed bug detection dogs, drug dogs. Those are the people that look at the full mortality. Stock dogs. The stock dog industry is huge out there, and we write the majority of all the stock dogs in the United States under the full mortality. So that's just a separate policy, and those dogs have to be at least 6 months old before you can buy it. After that, it's fairly easy. It's application, and we have to send it into an underwriter and have the dog approved before we can issue the policy. But usually that takes anywhere from 2 days to a week, depending on how many apps they get in per the week. Multi-service breeders, trainers, groomers, that type of stuff. So if you breed dogs, you groom dogs, you definitely want to have a general liability policy, number one, for people coming on and off the premises. You definitely want to have animals in your care, custody, and control. So while you're grooming a dog, he jumps off the bench, breaks his leg, they're going to hold you responsible. That's what our animal bailee covers. It covers the injury to the dog. And anytime you have a dog that's hurt, that's in your care, custody, control, those people know that you're going to be paying the vet bill, so they will try everything possible to save old Fluffy. We see more vet bills over $10,000 than we actually like to. Most of the time when we talk to pet sitters, dog walkers, the onesie-twosie dog trainers, the people that do the onesie-twosie board in your home, always suggest that they carry the $25,000 limit, which I would consider the minimum nowadays in the dog industry. Examples of something that's covered by insurance versus not covered. Of course, we went into that. Your own dogs, there's a situation where you don't have coverage for them unless you buy a mortality policy. We don't do health insurance. We've been asked to do health insurance. It just hasn't been able to coordinate the health insurance into our program. It's always a separate company. So you can buy health insurance on, you know, if you Google pet sitter, pet insurance on Google, there's 100 and some companies out there that offer it, and I'm not really familiar with it, and I don't know who the best is or how it works. You're kind of on your own on that one. Things that aren't covered by insurance, of course, your own personal dogs. If you have puppies in there that aren't sold and not yet delivered, of course, they would be considered owned dogs. That would be something that would be excluded. Usually with a business owner's policy, you know, you have fire, lightning, windstorm, and hail, and all that kind of stuff. Usually you have loss of income on a business owner's policy. You have a lot of bells and whistles for valuable papers, stuff like that. You automatically get that coverage. Coverage for your animals in your care, custody, and control. So you take care of your clients' animals or the puppies that are sold but not yet delivered. Workers' compensation. Not very many breeders have employees, but if you do have employees, there are state laws which regulate workers' comp. So most times, every state in the union, with the exception, I think, of Texas, require you to carry workers' compensation on employees. And getting insurance for your program, just talk to an insurance agent, I guess. Usually an independent agent is probably your best bet. They have a number of carriers. It's somewhat limited to the number of companies that do the dog industry. We have 3 or 4 of them in our office, and we quote them out depending on what the risk is, because sometimes the Hartford doesn't like to do pet sitters, dog walkers. They'll do dog trainers. They'll do breeders. Travelers will not do a dog trainer. They'll do a pet sitter, a dog walker. So every carrier's got their own little appetite of what they want to write and what they don't want to write. So that's kind of our job to know what is good, what will work, and what won't work, so we don't waste a lot of time of our time, your time, and their time. So, but you definitely want to talk to somebody and tell them what your situation is, you know, what you're doing, how you're doing it, et cetera, and let them ask some questions so they can design a program that's going to meet your exposures that you have. It's, you know, like the LLC question, you know, hey, we're running LLC, we're running our backyard. Now I'm not insured as an individual property owner because my homeowner's excludes it. One of the most important. The other one is, how's your building out back insured? Well, it's insured under my homeowners. Yeah, it is. If you keep your car and your lawnmower in it, but as soon as you do something that's commercial in it, it's automatically excluded. The problem with that is that most people don't realize that until the claims adjuster comes out and says, oh, I see the wind blew the roof off. Yeah, what do you do inside? Well, it's a grooming shop. He'll go to page 35 in your homeowners and say it's excluded because it's a business property. And he'll walk out the door and you're stuck with buying a new roof for that building. That's happened many times. We've got a lot of calls after a loss. They go, ooh, you know, we just had a loss and that building's not covered under our homeowners. Then we insured under a business owner's policy. So that's pretty much the program.
Well, thank you so much for walking us through all of that. It was super helpful information. I think it's time for some questions from our community because I'm sure they have many. So I'm going to start with our previously submitted ones. So our first question is from Lori, and she said, I've put a lot of money into certain dogs, acquisition fees, training towards titling, health testing. Some have titles or points towards championships. What can be done to protect my business assets if one or more of these dogs is injured or dies? Most handlers make you sign a release form so they aren't held liable if something should happen.
Okay, so if it's an owned dog, then you'd want to look at two ways. Look at a medical, a health plan for it. That'd be one. And the second would be look at a mortality policy, whether you'd want the limited or the full mortality. That is about the only way you can protect your asset on owned dogs. If they are owned by somebody else and you're showing them or you're handling the dogs, then you want to make sure that you have a general liability policy, of course, with the animal Bayley coverage in there that covers animals in your care, custody, and control. That covers non-owned dogs for both medical and or death. Now, those policies don't cover death by sickness. So if the dog gets parvo, kennel cough, heartworm, whatever, there isn't any carrier out there that offers animal Bayley that will cover death by sickness. The only way you can get death by sickness is a full mortality policy. That's the way you would handle that. Owned dogs, full mortality, a health insurance policy. Non-owned dogs, you want to go with the animal Bayley under your business policy.
Awesome. All right. For our next question, it's from Lisa, and she's wondering, why would a small hobby breeder need insurance?
Well, you know, if you breed one or two litters a year, I mean, the thing is that your homeowner's carrier, if somebody came to the house and got injured, basically your exposure is very minimal when you do that. But if somebody comes on the property, you get hurt, the kid gets bit by the mother dog, whatever, you know, that type of stuff, that is going to be excluded under your homeowner's policy. If the dogs are being used for business purposes, if you're just a regular homeowner and you own a pet dog and it bites somebody, of course, your homeowner's policy will pay for that under the personal liability. But there could be a problem with that if you're running like a small breeding operation that your homeowner's carrier might pull that business pursuits endorsement and say, hey, you were selling dogs, you're trying to make a profit off this litter, you know, we're going to exclude it and not represent you. So to be safe, I still would buy a comprehensive general liability, because the thing is that you can't rely on your homeowner's policy for that, because after the fact, they can say, no, it's not covered. If you call them, then you run into the situation where, hey, you're running a dog breeding operation. And quite frankly, homeowners carriers, a third of all of their liability losses come from dog bites. And not so much right now, but in the past, homeowners ask the questions, hey, what kind of dog do you own? How many do you have, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of those homeowners carriers back then, they were excluding, you know, the pit bulls, the Rottweilers, the Dobermans, the German Shepherds. So that has not been a problem here lately, but they still are kind of anti-dog, if you want to use that term. So don't take a chance. I wouldn't, because the homeowner's carrier is, they just don't like any business exposure whatsoever, or they're canceled.
Definitely better to be safe than sorry in that instance, I think.
You got it.
And this next question is from Priscilla, and she's wondering, if I'm not a dog transporter, but I may have someone else's dog in my vehicle at some point, say taking them in public for a training or picking them up for a grooming, do I need to have special insurance for transportation?
Normally under a animal Bayley coverage, no matter who you buy it from, it covers animals while they're on the premises, while they're off the premises, and while they're in transit. So that is where you're going to find the coverage. So you would actually have coverage while in transit for the dogs. Our show dog people, they're always, you know, every weekend they're headed off someplace. While they're in transit, or sporting dog people, take them to field trials and all that. So we cover them while they're at the kennel, while they're in transit, while they're away from the premises. So that's what you want to do, is make sure you have an animal Bayley coverage, and that covers your while in transit coverage.
And as a follow-up to that, I know many breeders in our community, they use resources like flight nannies to transport puppies to their new homes, or on-the-ground transportation as well to bring their puppies to buyers. So would that also fall under what you just termed transportation?
Okay, here's what happens. Okay, so you have an animal bailee coverage, and if you deliver the dog and while it's in transit, something happens to it, it would be covered under the animal bailee coverage. Once you give that dog to somebody else, you've lost possession. So now it's going to be the transporting company that is responsible. We do transport companies, but quite frankly, we haven't had a whole lot of luck with them loss wise. Some are fine. We never hear from them. They do their thing, but there's a lot of them that stuff happens and it's just stupidity. So if you're going to give a dog to somebody, you want to make sure that you're giving it to a transport company that knows what they're doing. And I would get some type of certificate from them that shows they have animal bailee. Because once you give that, it's like a dry cleaner. You take a leather coat to the dry cleaner. While it's at the dry cleaners, if something happens to it, he has coverage for it. But once he sends it out to the leather cleaner, then the leather cleaner is responsible and not the dry cleaner. So that's how you have to look at it. So once you give it to somebody to do, it's like a lot of times where we have dog trainers that use kennels. Once you take that dog and you put it in somebody else's kennel, you want to make sure that that kennel has animal bailee coverage because now that dog is in their possession and not yours. So that's one thing that you want to make darn sure is that that transporting company has coverage for your dogs while they're in their care and for how much.
Thank you. And I think this actually might be our last question that we have for you. And you might have answered it already, so please feel free to just either regurgitate the answer if there's anything you want to add to it. Mm-hmm. This one's from Mary, who said, can you address the insurance need if the breeder is also a trainer? Is there a separate policy required and any difference if the training's done away from the home property?
Usually you would write one policy for that, and it would include the training exposure and the breeding exposure. And you write the liability under a policy called a comprehensive general liability policy. And in rare, rare occasions, there'll be what they call a premises only coverage. But in most cases, 99.9%, that general liability policy covers you anywhere in the United States, Canada, Puerto Rico, and U.S. territories. So wherever you go, that liability goes. We follow you around like your shadow on a sunny day. Training the dogs and breeding dogs. It goes back to kind of like a good example is our Labrador Retriever people. They breed dogs, okay? And they sell puppies. And then that puppy goes to the new owner. And once that puppy reaches a certain age, a lot of those people bring that dog back. And that's how he makes his money by training that puppy for those people. He trains it and gives it back. Then he'll take that dog off premises. He'll run it, and a lot of times they'll just have your dog and they'll run it in field trials, all that kind of stuff. So he's actually a breeder and he's a trainer. And wherever he goes, we go. Wherever the dog goes, not owned dog, while it's in your possession at your house, in transit or away from the premises, it's going to be covered under the animal bailee coverage.
Perfect. Thank you for answering that one. I think that is actually the last question we have for you. So thank you so much for joining us today and teaching us all about breeding insurance. It is, I know, super helpful for our community. They've been asking for something like this for a very long time, so we cannot thank you enough for being here.
That's what we do all day long.
And thank you so much to all of our attendees for asking such amazing questions and for joining us today for another breeding business focused webinar. If you have not yet joined our community, we would absolutely love to have you join at gooddog.com/join so you can join many more events like this in the future. So thank you all so much again for being here. Thank you, Dennis, for your time. So that wraps up this week's episode of the Good Dog Pod. We hope you learned a lot from this and that it'll be a helpful resource for you and your programs in the future. Thank you again for tuning in and joining us for another episode of this podcast, and we'll see you right back here on April 17th for our next episode. Thank you for listening to the Good Dog Pod. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode, so be sure to subscribe to the Good Dog Pod on your favorite podcast platform.